This is episode 34 of the Great Speech Podcast on How to Get Hired, an interview with Sonal Behl.
And she says, she still remembers that the hiring manager said, so when are we getting brownies? You know, and she was like, when am I getting the job?
It's a Great Speech Podcast for the public speakers. We're going way down deep to look at what makes a communicator. We'll look at all different topics. From the bottom to the top, so get your mind free of all the distractions and please listen up.
It's the Great Speech Podcast.
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 Thanks, Dad. Welcome back, my great communicators. How you guys doing? I hope you are well. Thank you for joining me on another episode of the Great Speech Podcast. This is, of course, me, Kolarele Shunaike, your communication super skills guru wizard coach, kind of tackling everything or all things communication. And in this week's podcast episode, I have got a really, really intriguing interview with a lady, a friend, a colleague of mine called Sonal Behl. I'm glad I got that name right because I butchered it, of course, when I first did it in the interview, as you will hear. And Sonal is a really, really great figure, one that I really encourage you to get to know, reach out to on LinkedIn, especially if you are looking to build your career. She is a career coach, founder of Supercharge, which is her own career advisory firm. She's got a really great background as a HR director and done loads of leadership roles in HR for firms like GE and PricewaterhouseCoopers. She's lived all over the world in Asia, Latin America, Europe, and which I discovered she's fluent in, I think it's four languages or maybe five. She's got English, Spanish, Hindi, French, and I think a little bit of Dutch, a tiny little bit, as I think she said. So really kind of multi-talented lady. And actually, one of the things she's launching right now, which I think is absolutely superb idea, is kind of an online coaching club, I guess you call it, where she delivers kind of coaching advice, but all for the price of effectively a Netflix subscription rather than kind of the thousands and thousands that you're often used to finding. And she's doing that to support people who, I guess, can't always access the kind of career coaching and career help that they need because of finances. So she's brought it a really super, super low option. It's something I think she's just launched. So actually really, really interested in seeing how that goes. I think it's a fantastic idea. Links, of course, are somewhere. If you scroll down, you'll see to that Supercharge website where she has that subscription option. Sonal is also the host of her own podcast. I know that because she actually reached out to me for a little bit of advice. It's one of those cool things when you've been doing this for as long as I have now that people start asking you for advice, which is nice. So she reached out to me for some advice on how to kind of start up her podcast, which is already going great, great guns. It's called How I Got Hired. Super name. And it's entirely about how to get that kind of first big job that you want, which I think is really, really superb. Really good podcast. She actually had me on recently, which is great. I will put the link in the podcast notes, of course, so scroll down. So it just felt right to invite her on my podcast because I really enjoyed the conversation. But I sensed, you know, it's one of those things that when you are being interviewed, you can always feel that there is so much that the interviewer has to offer. So I just had to have her back on my podcast. And in this episode, we really are talking about how to get hired, which is her speciality as a career coach. And it's interesting because, you know, what I liked actually is that I talked to her about how I can still feel that acute pain that you go through when you haven't got a job or you haven't got to the stage that you want to get to. And it's interesting that despite all of her experience, she kind of still recognizes that too. I like the fact that she's a HR director, actually, because it means that she's able to offer her advice, not just from the point of view of people who are looking to get hired, but to think about it from the point of view of people who actually do the hiring, which is really fantastic. And she gives some great advice as to how hirers and employers look at things from their point of view. She's really, really gone deep in on LinkedIn. She, in fact, kind of recommended to me to do the LinkedIn live shows, which I now do. She does a weekly one, which is fantastic. And actually, she's the one who kind of inspired me to get involved in it. So that's really, really great. And we kind of just talk about everything, you know, how to leverage your cold network, not just your warm network, for getting a job. Of course, how to craft your CV so it stands out. And she's got a really interesting approach to dealing with interviews based on a process that's got an acronym called HEPLASH. I think it is HEPLASH. And she explains all of that in the interview. And then finally, we actually kind of mutually bonded over our, or at least bonded over our mutual dislike of the movie Speed 2. So yeah, that's quite interesting. So yeah, it's a really good episode. So glad that Sonal chose to come onto my podcast, because as you know, I'm trying to get people to you who have some value to offer on the topic of how we communicate out to the world in order to get the things that we want and to make the world a better place and to build our lives and our careers as we go about it. So, long intro, I know, but I kind of really wanted to set it up because I think she's got some great value to offer. So without further ado, here we are, me and Sonal talking about how to get hired. Okay, welcome back, my great communicators. Thank you for joining me again. And as I said, I have Sonal back. So the reason I'm laughing, guys, is because literally just before I started this, I just asked Sonal, how do I say your name? And I got it. Right. And then as soon as I start saying it on the mic, of course, I've messed it up. Sonal Bahel. No, I know the surname I got wrong, but you're going to correct me. Go and correct me and make me look silly.
Gala, thank you for having me. And can I just say, not to make you look silly, but this is one of the easiest names you'll find in India. There are way more complicated. Sonal Bahel, and lovely.
Sonal Bahel, yeah.
Thank you for having me.
No, and thank you for making me feel better by messing that up, especially somebody who gets his name butchered all the time. It's like I'm embarrassed. But listen, thank you so much for coming on the Great Speech Podcast. I really appreciate it, because the subject that we're going to discuss today is one that I have a real kind of affinity for. So we'll get to that in a second. But for now, as I say, I always start my podcast episodes with a quote. And when I have a guest, that privilege goes to my guest. So what is your quote and what does it mean to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I've been looking forward to this interview for weeks. Okay, so I am super buzzed to be here. Kala, I've got two quotes. The first quote is from my early 20s, three words, which kind of changed my life. People say this very lightly. I don't say this lightly. The three words are expectations reduce joy. So,
I haven't heard that one.
I love this one. I heard this through my sister, who was going through some, a Buddhism phase. I mean, it's not fair to say phase. She's still very much into it. But it doesn't need a lot of explaining. But, you know, the whole give without expecting, we're humans. But every now and then, when I expect something, I just remember expectations reduce joy. So that's the big one for me. And the second one is six words from 2020. And I heard it from Elizabeth Gilbert, who's the famous author from Eat, Pray, Love and so much other stuff she's written. You know, there are days when you feel less than yourself and you don't maybe want to, you know, get up, start your day. You know, we're recording this on Monday. So this is a good reminder. And that one is, get dressed and make your bed. Six words.
Oh, okay. What's the ethos behind that? I know because it's something I do with my kids about making their bed, but I don't know if that's the same ethos. So tell me about the ethos behind that.
The ethos is, you know, somebody asked her about working from home and how do you motivate yourself? And she said, I've been working from home for 25 years. And there are days you're okay with just hanging out in your PJs. And I do that a lot, but they can be different PJs. But the point is, the moment you make your bed, let's say you're clinically depressed. The moment you make your bed, you feel like, number one, you've done one good thing today. You've achieved something today.
Gotcha.
And the second thing is, you don't feel like sliding back in bed because it was too much effort to make your bed.
So, right, so gotcha. So that's probably similar thing. I think it was a military guy that gave either a TED talk about it or something about if you want to achieve, make your bed. And the whole thing was, especially even with kids, is give them that sense of something that they are completely in control of and that they do, and they do it properly and everything. And then it gives that kind of mentality of doing things well, doing things professionally, trying to achieve. So it's probably a similar thing there, actually.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. All right. So that's a good start, because it's a quote that I didn't know. So, and that's always better for me because it means I learn and grow. So listen, thank you, as I said, for coming on this podcast. Because one of the things that, in fact, funnily enough, someone recently actually just asked me for some help because they were struggling to find work. And I think they reached out in that kind of, okay, yeah, Collar, give me advice, but, you know, what will Collar really know about this? And all I could think of was, I still remember the pain of being out of work. It's, I don't know, I think it's almost like something that doesn't leave you. So what I wanted to know is, from your point of view, right, you do the whole how I got hired, your HR director, you've done all sorts of things, which we'll get into. But do you still feel that? You know, is it just me? Am I making it up? Do you still have that feeling of remembering what it was like to not have the role or the job or whatever it was?
Kola, I have lost my job 3 times.
Okay.
I know exactly what it's like. I know exactly what it does to your self-confidence. We're talking about this right now. It's almost like I'm in that moment all over again, and the heart racing, you know, when you're called into the room and you're given the news, and these days we don't even have that luxury. It's maybe a text message or a phone call. I've been let go over the phone. I've been let go completely blindsided. And the third one, I was let go, but I knew 3 months in advance it was coming. There was a new CEO, etc. So yeah, you know, the empathy that I have is really high, because I've been on the other side of the table. I have had to let people go in my career, which is one of the worst parts of the HR profession, or anybody who's at that senior level where they have to give people this news. And I've been almost coddling, you know, in the sense that, hey, are you okay? I know they're not okay. It's a stupid question, but, you know, let me call you a cab and give them whatever it is they need. Go above and beyond. If it means giving them a little bit more than the minimum severance, doesn't matter. Because I've seen kindness when it was given to me, and what it did. You know, those are little things. So the biggest issue there is, Kola, when your sense of identity is so close to your job. Because the moment you lose your job, you feel like your sense of identity is gone. I'm a barrister today. I've lost my job. I'm not a barrister anymore. That's not true. But it feels like that in that moment. And those who've never lost their job will never know. I hope you do, because I think that it teaches you empathy like nothing else. But those who've never lost, they can say, I understand, but they will never understand it, because it's almost like you're grieving. You're grieving for the time that you were employed, all those memories. You don't have positive memories. Suddenly, you only think of the way you were let go. The ending kind of is highlighted, as opposed to a lot of good things that happened, in that position, in that company.
You know, I had never really thought about it from the point of view of someone who has to do the letting go, which you say you've had experience of as well. What does it feel like from that end of things?
Oh my gosh, I have let people go in English. I've let people go in French. It's my fourth language, and the empathy that you have to have. Oh gosh, every time I've done it, Kola, I've done it a few dozen times. Every time I've done it, I have sensed my heart racing. And you know, you have to be trained. You can't just go in and wing it. Say, I'm going to do this. You have to be prepared a little bit for all scenarios. You know, the person, man or woman, there might be tears. There might be, you know, anger, which is actually the normal cycle of grief. There has to be anger, then denial. What is wrong with me? How dare you? And then sadness. So you see them going through all of it. And I had to be trained, you know. I learned from some experts who've done this a lot more. I call them the undertakers. I would make sure, because I am a softie, so this is not, I can't like just do this and get out of the room and next I'm in a meeting and everything is normal. I will think about that person's reaction for weeks at a time. And that's not very helpful, because you don't want so much sympathy and so much empathy that you say something wrong and then the person can take you to court. You don't want that. So I remember things like making sure that particular day I was dressed up a bit more. I know this sounds a bit harsh. I would be dressed up like in my power suit. Why? Because I'd be crumbling inside. I felt like that would help me to protect myself. Even though they are the ones that need protecting, but I would try and do it in a very humane way and complete eye contact, you know. And I've had to, you know, you have to sit with the hiring manager. As an HR person, you can't just say, hey, sorry, you don't have a job anymore. I don't know enough, but I'm the facilitator of this, of the discussion of the transaction. So the hiring manager would be next to me. And the hiring manager's behavior many times, Kala, that drove me up the wall. I've seen people with their laptop on, talking as if, oh, by the way, I have to do this. And the second you leave, I'm back to my laptop. So, you know, they need training as well. And things like smiling, they smile a lot. And for me as well. The third is get to the point immediately. Don't beat around the bush. No patronizing stuff immediately. Hey, thanks for coming here today on such short notice. I'm afraid I don't have some good news. You know, or I'm afraid I have some bad news. I would start with that immediately. People know what's going on, you know, as it is. There's an HR person and the hiring manager in the room or your boss in the room, you know.
So you're not prolonging it like they do on X Factor where they say, how do you feel? Did you like your performance? And, you know, then sorry you didn't get through.
No, one thing is that you have something, like one thing is what you say and the second is how you say it. You don't want the how you say it to be torturing the person, because already the what you say, the content is already bad enough. So content versus delivery, content short, delivery with empathy. But you know, try and make it as easy as possible on the other person, considering this, they are living through one of the worst days of their life, of their career.
So having been HR director, kind of seems all over the place, actually. You had now are basically a career advisor helping people at the other end. So what prompted the defection?
Funnily enough, it was, I remember it like yesterday. It was a cold, dark day in December. And I had just let someone go. This was the trigger, but the signs had been there for months at a time. You know, I love corporate life, Kala. I've always loved it. I'm one of those people that looks forward to waking up. My clothes would be ready the night before, you know, walk with my heels and just be so happy. Just be so happy to be at work with my colleagues, etc. Till I didn't love it anymore. And it just felt like, you know, there was a lack of alignment between, you know, what I thought the job would entail, the position, versus the actual reality. And that day in December, I remember walking back to my car. I had just let someone go. I didn't necessarily agree with it, but the decision had been made. And, you know, you've got to be professional and you've got to execute on the decision. So I did it. And I was walking back to my car and I fell really bad, like not badly, but I scraped my knee. And I remember being in a workshop a few days before where I was facilitating it, and they were talking about things like signs of getting close to burnout. And one of the signs of getting close to burnout is you fall over for no reason.
Oh, you're not okay.
In control of your... And it just... I've never talked about this publicly, but that kind of told me that, you don't have a job in hand. What are you going to do if you're going to leave? And I was like, at some point, you stop caring. So I was like, this is it. It's now or never. And 9 days later or 10 days later, I remember I went in and I said, I think this is the end of the chapter.
And you feel...
Then,
yep.
Sorry. And then I had no clue, Kola. I thought I'll immediately get lapped up by... I decided I was going to do projects. I didn't want to do long-term employment anymore. So I got in touch with many headhunters and they were like, wow, you're so impressive. You're so exotic. Everything. Wow. I'm like, okay. Where are the jobs? Show me the jobs.
Yeah.
None. None. There was lots of, you know, you're great, but do you speak Dutch? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I'm like, I'm from India. I've learned Spanish as an adult. I speak fluently. I've learned French as an adult. I speak fluently. You want to know the one thing I don't have? So nothing happened. And then I was like, I was lost. I have no problem admitting it. I thought this is what I wanted, but it wasn't working out. So I was lost. And then I, out of the blue, decided, hey, I know some stuff because I've helped people so much for so many years on aspects of their career, so many different aspects of their career. I'm just going to start creating videos on YouTube. I don't know what's going to happen. So that's it. I started doing it. Nothing happened. Like 10 subscribers. Half of them had my last name.
Hey, listen, the best businesses are started with family and friends as the first customers.
And one of them was my son, and he was like, I don't want to be your subscriber. What is the CV business? What do you interview? What interview tips, mama? And I was like, yeah, you know what? Then something happened, Kola. I took the same content and I put it on LinkedIn. And I've been on LinkedIn for years, but I've completely ignored it. Completely, like this horrible stepmother. So I was like, I'm going to do something with it. And then moment I put it on LinkedIn, I started getting calls from people I'd never heard of. And they said, hey, you published this article or you published this video. Can I talk to you? And you know, when you have been through some stuff in your career, your self-esteem takes a big beating.
Mm.
So I had a very hard time believing that you want to work with me? And they were like, yeah. And then another client and then another client and then the rest is history.
And your LinkedIn profile is really good, actually. It's one of the things, I even copied it for this interview, your LinkedIn about statement, because so many people's about statements on LinkedIn are just so bland, right? It's just, I am this, I am that. But yours is very, you know, you are here because you feel your current job is not doing justice to your potential. Bam, right?
Yeah.
It's like literally telling people.
Yeah.
What I liked about it is that it was really speaking to the people that you are trying to serve. You know, LinkedIn, technically, yes, it is, I guess, almost like your online CV, but actually you use it in a way that says, no, you can see my CV, but actually this is what I'm about. And if you're interested in this, I'm the person to speak to. And I find it very, very powerful.
Thank you.
I don't know if that's something that you'd seen somewhere else or you just decided to do it.
No, I that's a great point. So I can't tell you how many times people have reached out saying, your first line in your LinkedIn summary spoke to me. And I was like, yes, you know. However, Kola, I've been on LinkedIn, like I said, for the longest time. I was one of, I think, the first few millions. I've been on LinkedIn since December 2005, which is a long time.
Yeah,
I did nothing with it. I treated it like a dumping ground. So for the longest time, Kola, my summary section, my about section was the bland one you're talking about. Lots of different reasons I didn't care about it. And then I hired a coach when I was going through the career challenge a couple of years ago. And she told me, I've got to change a few things there. There was so much hesitation. I don't know why. I didn't want the attention. I didn't want to write my MBA in the subject. I didn't want to write the languages I speak. I don't know why. And she said, what is that telling you? it's there's fear. So when people say, I can't put this in my about section, I said, listen, that's okay. I've planted the seed. I'm going to give it a little bit of time. I'm going to water it every now and then.
Yeah.
Little fertilizer may help, but it has to come from you. And so I've seen bland about sections and I empathize because I used to have a bland about section. Now I tell my clients, the about section is not about you, which sounds, you know, it's your website, it's your sales page, it's your resume, it's your business card. It's your business card when you meet somebody for the first time. Hi, nice to meet you. So, and people are like, yeah, you can say that because you work for yourself. I want to get a job in employment. I'm like, yeah, same thing. You're the business. You're a business of one. Mm. You're a business of one. Yeah, but I want to be an employee. No, get the employee mindset. Chuck it out the window. You're a business. You're here to provide a service. And speak to the people who want to hire you. Speak their language. It goes really far in terms of... And there can be a section where, why me? You know, why should you talk to me? Obviously, that's the sales part. But the other part, which all marketing gurus tell people like Kola, like people like you and me, speak to your ideal client. Same thing. Speak to your ideal employer. In terms of what are their pain areas and how can you help them and no one else?
Exactly, exactly. So how do you get hired, right? That's what I want to know. That's kind of really what I want to get a sense from you about. You've obviously got the podcast, which is fantastic, by the way. Congratulations on that. Because I know speaking to you about it just before you launched it and I've seen, must have about, 12 episodes now already, out there.
Today is episode number 10 going out.
Number 10, okay, right.
No, I'm excited. You're one of the first people, Kola, I told about this because I don't like to talk about projects before they're out. But when I saw that you had a podcast, I was like, okay, I'm doing this. No, it's exciting. It's top 25 in careers in 8 countries. And it's exciting. And, you know, it's selfish as well. I mean, I get so much out of these conversations for myself. And I quote my guests when I speak to someone. And I'm like, if other people hear it, it's a great bonus. I hope they get something out of it. But I'm getting a lot out of it. And I'm having a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, so you obviously came to it with your own knowledge from, you know, all the work that you've done. But what would you say, are there any common themes or is there a common idea that's come out from the interviews that you have done? Specifically yes. On, okay, if I had a blank canvas or somebody fresh who was looking to get their first job or move into a new career, whatever it was, this is what you must know, or these are the top 5 things or whatever it is. Are you getting that now?
I'm seeing patterns, definitely. And the first thing that I've noticed people say is, I don't want to be repetitive, Kola, because I'm sure everyone says relationships are important, et cetera, et cetera. But the first thing I've heard people say is that most of the time when they got hired, how did they get hired? You know, and I always start the podcast with the question, how did you get hired towards that job that you really wanted? So not like a sidey gig, but like the real thing that they'd set their eyes on. And most of the time, it's because of a friend of a friend of a friend. So, you know, being open in terms of network, and some people I know don't like the word networking. Call it something else. Call it keeping in touch with friends. Call it relationship building.
Right. Well, whatever it takes to get
whatever
there, right?
It takes, whatever it takes. But people forget, you know, if I were to interview your listener right now, this person listening to the show, and if I were to say, how did you get hired in the first job, the second job, the third job? The light bulbs go off. And then people realize, oh, yeah, it was a friend of my dad. And they, you know, put me in touch or whatever. So that has been the number one thing that I've noticed. The second is the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Meaning they went and made the ask. You, just because you know someone well-known in your industry or your friend is in Google, it doesn't mean, it means nothing. Like, you have to ask, you have to put yourself out there. I think I need help. And in that, your cold network, which is, you know, people you haven't spoken with in a while, like 5, 10 years, is as helpful, if not more, than your warm network. Because your warm network is just the same set of people again and again. And I even spoke with a professor about it. And there's research in, you know, research in sociology from the 70s to prove it. And they call it strong ties and weak ties. So people who with whom you haven't had deep friendships, but it's been a while, reaching out to them, but with emotional intelligence, not, hey, it's been 10 years. How are you, Kala? Hey, I'm fine. Listen, I see that you're working in Google. That doesn't work. Nobody likes that. Yeah. People feel used. People feel like there's an ulterior motive. But if you
can I just pause you there and just put a little side note to, yeah, everyone listen to that because I get that a lot. Hey, caller, it's been what, 25 years? Anyway, I've got a legal problem. All right. Okay,
no, fine. There's a way to do it. There's a way to do it. And people forget that because nobody likes to be on the other end of, I call it connect and pounce. And somebody else called it connect and pounce. And I call this reconnect and pounce. It's like, dude, just warm up to it, you know, give me a moment. So that's the second one, which is your network. And the third one, which has come again and again, it's beautiful, is the whole concept of karma. Where I'll give you an example. I had this guest from Dubai and she was living in Paris at the time. And she helped someone out who was going through a struggle. She spent 3 hours with her. She said, this is important. She didn't charge anything for it. And that person was like, should I do this degree or not? She took time off. She said, I think this is an important decision, you know, that she's going to be making in her life. She helped her out and she forgot about it. And years later, a position came up as the chief marketing officer for the largest real estate firm in Dubai and the second largest in the world. They thought of her. She'd not done direct marketing before. She'd never lived in Dubai before. She, oh my gosh. And they said, yeah, come in. Obviously, she had to go through the interviews. But why on earth did they think of her? Somebody remembered the favor. And this has happened with so many guests that they were kind. They were caring. And it comes back.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes it's happened during the podcast when they're talking and they're, I can feel the emotion and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, it came full circle. And that's how Absolutely. I got this job and that's how I got hired. So that's very beautiful for me. And it just goes to show that karma is alive and kicking and don't ever take it for granted. Everything you do today. And it's not the religious thing, you know, it's more about what goes around comes around.
Yeah.
And whatever you do, it's, you know, as you sow, so you reap the age old quote.
And you talked, we mentioned about kind of your LinkedIn profile and really using that proactively. Do you have any thoughts or ideas on CVs and how people should frame that or shape that will make them stand out to get hired?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I'm a big fan of brevity. and that's why, I mean, it's a bit of sacrilege what I'm saying, but for me, the word resume and CV, I associate it to be the same thing because the resume writers out there are going to be like, oh, how dare you? You know, resume is French for summary.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Curriculum vitae is Latin for, you know, the story of my life.
Yeah.
You can have the story of your life and you can be brief about
make
it.
Make it brief, yeah.
So I'm a big fan, Kala, of getting to the point immediately. So, you know, why you? So the main thing is the CV should not be description. It should be achievement. That's it. That's the main thing. If people don't remember anything from today, remember this. Achievement versus description. I was responsible for this. Yeah, okay. But what did you do? You know, what was the impact you had? And
gotcha.
That is what sets you apart from everyone else because most people's CV is a copy paste of the job description. It's boring. It's going to get tossed. I'm sorry to say this, but there's hundreds of thousands of people who want the same job sometimes. So how do you distinguish yourself? You talk about this thing that you did. You know, I was responsible for insights. I was responsible for charts and data. Okay. What did you do with that? It was, it gave senior management insights. Okay. That's good. What else? It gave senior management insights to reduce material costs by 30%. Ooh. It's like, now we're going somewhere. There's data in there and nothing speaks like numbers and data. And secondly, you look like you're an expert. So that's why I'm a big fan of the little summary at the top. No objective. I hate that word objective. Nobody cares what my objective is. Yeah, your objective is to land the job. We don't have to spell it out. Nobody cares about your objective. But the summary is for this really busy person who's reading your resume. And they say the average time spent is 6 seconds. 6 seconds. So make it count. And my top tip is make the top part of the CV and the bottom part of the CV attractive. This is my favorite tip. And I've seen it happen with me. I've seen it happen with me as a candidate so many times. And I've seen it happen with me as a recruiter. Top part meaning, if it's acceptable in the country you live in, to have a little profile picture, even though LinkedIn will have a profile picture, but it humanizes you. You can have a nice smiling picture. In some countries, it's looked down upon, so don't do it. Or if the system, the applicant tracking system doesn't process, then don't put a picture in it. But if you know it's going to a human, that helps. It makes it visual. And a summary with your big name, Colarelli Sonaike, nice and big. That's your brand. And not like little name and the word curriculum vitae is huge. No, don't. It's like
that's always strange.
Real estate, precious real estate. And a brief summary on who you are, what you've done, if possible, your most impressive achievement. Put it in the summary, get their attention right out the gate. And the bottom part of the CV, which is a little controversial, I like to be memorable and I like my clients to be memorable. So you've got your education, all of that stuff. If you were in any clubs, all of that stuff. Personal interests. And I had a post, Kola, which I talked about personal interests on LinkedIn. It went crazy viral. It's amazing. I spent 5 minutes on that post. It went crazy viral. A week later, I spent a weekend on one article and that got like nothing. It's so sad. Yeah. But this post, there were so many people who were new to the idea. And I was like, are you kidding me? I remember turning 21 and I remember writing something fun at the bottom of my resume and it got me noticed. Somebody I know, and I made her write, she said, I have no experience. I said, doesn't matter. We talked about her education and at the bottom she wrote, I bake probably the world's best brownie. Just for fun, humor. Yeah. You need to be somebody who's comfortable with that. And she says, she still remembers that the hiring manager said, so when are we getting brownies? And she was like, when am I getting the job?
Nice.
It's
funny. It's funny you say that because actually tucked somewhere, and I can't even remember where I put it, somewhere I think on either my LinkedIn profile or my website profile, I have, and I'm a West Ham fan.
Yeah,
the number of people that will, you're a first-time fan, I'm an Arsenal or whatever it is, and they'll really talk
to
me
about that. They remember it. Yeah. And, so it's not like I love reading, I love writing, and I love golf, and I love cooking. You're even if you make the effort to do it, then do it properly because the devil, I don't like the word, the angel is in the details, not the devil. So the angel is in the details. So it's like, oh, you love golf. Okay. I asked my client, I said, what's your handicap? Yeah, it's not that impressive. I'm like, write it and that you're working to improve. She says, yeah, I love running. Okay. Have you ever missed a run? No, I've never missed a run for as long as I've been running. I said, do you run in the snow? She said, I run irrespective. Write that.
Yeah.
So, cooking, what do you like to cook? So people who there's always going to be haters, right? So in that post that went crazy viral, I still have that on my featured section. There were so many haters in there. This is your job. You got to be professional. I'm like, yeah, people hire people. And the CV is to make a connection with the person reading it and get called for an interview. And that is a person. That's not a company who's reading your CV. It's a person. So connect with the person.
And you're probably better off getting a reaction than getting indifference, right?
Yeah. The what is the main thing we all want, Kola? We want to be remembered. And whether you're a job seeker, whether you're a business owner, we want to be remembered. We want top of mind recall. And I can't tell you, there were like 2,000-3,000 comments in there where people said, I still remember, that I wrote that I love knitting and I've done this particular thing which sounded crazy and I've helped my community. And the other person was like, oh, I love crochet, or oh, you went backpacking in Thailand. My favorite time was when I was in Koh Samui. So people are like, yeah, but you're there's a bias in there. There's always going to be haters out there, but you do whatever you can do to stand out because it's a competitive world.
And I watched in fact, I wanted to ask actually, because you've got your YouTube channel and your podcast, both of which are excellent. Do you have a preference at all? Are you getting more into the podcasting now or the YouTubing?
No, YouTube. I set up the channel 2 years ago, and I'm way more active on LinkedIn. So for me, the main thing is, and that's a very good question, where are your people? So if you're a job seeker today, or if you're a business owner today, where are the people who buy from you or hire you? Where do they hang out? In my case, they hang out on LinkedIn. So I post 4 to 5 times a week on LinkedIn. Yeah. Ever since I started that, which is this year, YouTube has been ignored a little bit. But I do go live every week on LinkedIn. And one of the places I'm live on is YouTube. So it's like it's there, but it's kind of forgotten.
Yeah.
Podcast I love because I'm loving because it's always a guest. And I love, learning from them. And I take quite a lot of time before I ask someone to be on my podcast. I'm sort of researching them, stalking them. And when they're on, I'm like, wow, you know, I have so much knowledge in 40 minutes that they share. So this is my newfound love.
Excellent. Well, the reason I ask is because you have a YouTube video on interviewing. Where you gave an acronym HEPLASH, I think was kind of your breakdown of how to interview, or at least what to be focused on when you were interviewing. I hope you still remember that because I thought it was really good. Do you want to tell us what your kind of HEPLASH approach is?
Oh, I love that. Thank you for asking. And I'm very impressed that you...
No, it was really good. It's really good.
That you watched it. That was my first time I was on camera. And I don't know if you can tell, I was nervous. I did like 20 retakes. so I have a thing for acronyms. I call it my acronym fetish. That's how I remember. That's how I memorized when I was a kid, anything that needed remembering. And that's how I teach. So HEPLASH is like the answer to the question... I've done everything. I've been on 20 rounds of interviews. I'm not getting hired. What am I doing wrong? Maybe there's nothing you're doing wrong, but it's important to put yourself in the shoes of the interviewer. What are they looking for? And this is the answer to that. What are they looking for? They're looking for HEPLASH. HEPLASH. H stands for hungry. I can't tell you, Kala, how many times I've come across fantastic people. They're perfect for the job, but they don't look like they want it. You got to look hungry. If there's two people in front of me and one just had cake, the other one hasn't eaten in 3 days, it's clear to me who wants it more. So that comes across in how you show up, how you ask questions, etc. The E in HEPLASH stands for energy, which is particularly in face-to-face. We're in COVID times right now, but it's equally visible. In fact, I would say the job seeker is at a little bit of a disadvantage because it's limited. Your body language is limited. So your energy, things like, you know, you slouched over, you look really interested, you're hungry. All of the other in the HEPLASH thing is great, but you're looking, you know, your intonation is sort of flat as opposed to having an inflection in your voice. Is there any eye contact? Maybe you're talking, but you just can't look at that person, all of that stuff. So that's E. The P is potential. I don't just want to hire you for the job today. That's what a hiring manager is thinking. They want to know, can you do the job, which is at a more senior level tomorrow? Do you have potential to grow? So it's not just a high performer, which, let's face it, if you've been called in for an interview, they know you can do the job. They know it. Because your CV has a lot of points and the hard things are proven. You know, the technical things are there. Do you have potential to grow? Have you learned things? Have you taken courses? Have you led a team? Even if you didn't lead a team, did you take a position where you had a leadership position? Even if you didn't have people below you, all of that. So that's potential.
Yeah, I always say to people, you want to make sure that they can see you in the job and they can see you in job growing as well.
I love that you said that, and I'm going to come to that. L is a long-term orientation, which means, will you stick around? Or will you drop, you know, will you jump ship at the drop of a hat? How can they know that? It's very difficult. The entire interview process, Kala, it's a big song and dance. We all know it. There's biases all over the place. But at the same time, you know, there are two things. One is, if in your CV, it looks like you've been jumping every 6 months or 1 year, that's a cause for worry, right? Would you hire yourself? And the second way they can do that is by asking you. Why? I don't like to judge because I've jumped as well. And there's reasons. But if they ask you why you left, your reasons matter. Your intention matters. Is it always because of more money? Then would you hire you? You know, so that's L, that's long-term orientation. And long-term doesn't have to be 5, 10, 20 years. Nobody's going to die with the same company. We all have ambitions. But at the same time, it takes so long to hire someone and invest in someone. You don't want to be gone before the return on investment, right? The A is attitude. And that's everything. That's the winning attitude. They want to see, were you whining, complaining? You know, what happened? How did you deal with failure? Tell me about a time when, you know, the favorite behavioral questions. Tell me about a time when this happened. That's how they're assessing your behavior. And are you, you know, in there with a can-do mentality, a winning attitude? That's it. That's for
me. So that's what they're looking for. Because, that question is very popular, isn't it? You know, tell me about a time you failed. Tell me about the time you had adversity. Yeah. That's what they're looking for then.
Yeah. And the answer you, and I have a document, which is part of my YouTube video, where I have 21 questions where people can assess all of these seven, AGP, LASH. So I'll just complete it. A is attitude. S is soft skills. And it's a pet peeve of mine. I hate this word soft. There's nothing soft about soft skills.
Yes.
Problem solving. Communication, Kola, there we are in your territory. Communication skills, listening, influencing skills, persuasion skills, team building, people skills. This is not soft. This is make or break. But this is also stuff they can assess in how you speak and you know, how are you expressing yourself. So in HR, we say the soft stuff is the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And the H, which is the last one, is actually hard skills. And that is your degree, your qualifications, your languages, your courses. The hard stuff is actually easy. It's funny. The words are funny because the hard stuff is teachable. H, hard. My language, I can learn that in a classroom. The soft stuff is more difficult to teach. It's more about, you know, being with a mentor, learning on the job, making mistakes, getting feedback. So when you put all of this together, HEPLASH, and I have all those questions. If somebody wants it, I can give that to you. This sort of gives people a much better idea. I think I did good on this part, but I think I need to work more here. So,
gotcha. That's fantastic framework. And just say, if you're listening to this, scroll down because the links will be in the notes and you'll be able to go through to Sonal's site and get all of this stuff.
Awesome. Thank you. I want more people to learn about this. This shouldn't be secretive. And all of this, Kola, when you put it together, it's like, okay, I'm here to solve a problem. Remember we said put on the hat of a business owner or a consultant. I'm here to solve a problem. And when you're speaking, and this came to me later. This came to me after my video, much after my video. I'm a big Star Wars fan. So it's like, are you familiar with Star Wars?
Oh, yeah. Although I'm more of a Trekkie than a Star Wars.
You're more of a Trekkie. So, okay. So for me, it's all about... like Yoda is my guy. Okay. So it's about Jedi mind tricks. And I had a video on LinkedIn, but it's also on my YouTube channel where it's about playing Jedi mind tricks. So when you're speaking and you're giving answers to questions, you want to use the same language that they use on their website, on their LinkedIn, on their Twitter. Yeah. So they get this impression, and you said that already, they get this impression you're already in the job. They get this impression they're working with you. They get this impression they're standing behind you in the line in the cafeteria. What is he going to be like? So, you know, using language like, so for the first 90 days, you know, for example, when it's your turn to ask questions. So for the first 90 days, what would be the main criteria that you would use to evaluate my performance? As opposed to the performance of the person who gets just go in there with a positive assumption that you're already hired.
And I love that because that really does make them have to think about you in the role and what they would be doing.
Not only that, which is lovely, and it's win-win. It's not only that, but it also gives you this adrenaline boost. This, when you're speaking, you're going to be like 3 inches higher, your shoulders, and you're smiling. And it's like the deal is done before the contract is signed. That's what you want. And most people say that, right? When I met with you, I kind of knew I already wanted to work with you because, you know, there's the halo thing. The LinkedIn is attractive or the CV is attractive. And the interview, you want it to be in such a way that the interview is just a formality.
That's Excellent. And what is there anything that you would say, what's the mentality you should go into that interview with that will mean that you really get it on the right footing?
That's a great question. There's a very fine line between confidence and arrogance.
Yeah, easily traversed.
On one hand, I tell my clients, you can do this. Actually, you were made to do this. So all other candidates, like they are not as suitable as you are. So that is also like pumping you up and you have this big head. But at the same time, going with, because something really attractive, Kola, very attractive, is self-awareness. And when I see a job candidate, and if you don't know something, you say, I don't know. Please don't BS, because people can tell, people can smell it from a mile away. Yes. So there's confidence. I'm going in to find out. And a guest of mine said that on a podcast, and I loved it. She said, I approach every single interview as a relationship building opportunity for my career. She says, I don't care if I get hired. Of course, I'd love to get hired. But if I don't get hired, there's thank you notes galore. There's touch on LinkedIn. There is stay in contact and be on top of that person's mind. I've seen people change their mind, or feedback. Thank you so much. I really appreciated the time that you spent. And I understand how challenging it is for you and that I couldn't be hired. Totally understand. I'd love to know if you have a minute or two, if you can tell me one or two things that you feel I could do better. People who express their self-awareness with complete confidence, but they're not arrogant. Like, I want those people on my team, because those are the winners. Those are the people who are going to hold, keep things together and pick up the pieces when things are falling apart. So just approach this whole meeting. Some people don't like interview. Change it. You don't like networking? Change it.
Yeah, right.
I call it a conversation, and I always start my meeting saying, so this is a conversation. They just kind of, people just ease a bit when we speak like that. So it's a conversation. You're going there to build a relationship. Maybe they're not very nice. Maybe they're not very friendly. That's okay. Not every relationship has to be best friends. And, go in, learn, get something out of it, get more out of it than they get out of it.
This has been fantastic, actually, because I'm listening to this not just for people, looking for work and things like that, but my daughter has 11 plus interviews coming up. So everything that you're saying, I'm going to kind of glean information out of that. And I'm going to be working with her to just help her in terms of how to kind of address that interview and really treat it as a conversation with the school, so they get to know her, she gets to know them.
Why 11 interviews at her age?
No, 11 plus. So to get into secondary school, you do the exams, and then if you get through the exams, you've got interviews. So that's the state she's got coming.
Oh
up.
Boy, that's
it's
an early
a crazy
start.
System. Yeah, do you know what? It's a crazy system, because I think they forget these are 11-year-olds, right?
Oh my gosh!
And the impact of not getting through something actually has. So we're really doing a lot of work to make sure that self-esteem wise, she's good, whatever happens. But that's a whole different story. I'll pick your brain on that anyway. Listen, Sonal, this is fantastic. Really, really great value. I know I'll be listening back to this just to listen out for the value that you've given, but I'm sure people will really appreciate that. So thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. As I've said, guys, if you're listening now, scroll down. You will see all the links to Sonal's website, YouTube channel, her own podcast, of course. And maybe within that, there'll be some links for any material resources that will help on that. But of course, what's coming next is the 10 question quick fire round. This just helps us get to know you in a slightly different way. 10 random questions. There is no right or wrong answer. It's just a conversation. Don't get nervous.
You're using my own lines on me.
There you go, you see.
I'm
reflecting back to you.
I'm a little nervous, but let's go.
Yeah. So, 10 questions, no right or wrong answer. Be instinctive. Let's just see how he goes. Okay, you ready?
Let's go.
Okay, so question one. Is there one person that you would love to have been hired to work either for or with in history? dead or alive?
I told you you're going to have awkward silences. You're gonna need to edit.
You did say that beforehand. Don't worry. I'll leave the dead space. Don't worry, guys. We're still here.
That's such a great question. I would love to be hired by. Yeah, random answers. It's Monday morning here. I would say it doesn't have to be only in the corporate world, but I'd love to be hired by Oprah, because she was refused a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
So the classic, sorry, you're not good enough, and actually you're never going to make it. And she believed in herself. The rest is history. But I'd love to have been hired by her as a coach.
Yeah.
To experience her journey, because she went through something phenomenal. Horrible abuse, being told no, and then
yeah,
the rest is history.
Yeah, I interviewed Paul C. Brunson, actually, who worked with her. And he was, when I asked her about her, really what he said was, is just her incredible belief in herself, that she backed herself, especially at times when nobody else did. And that was kind of if he's to identify the quality that he thought that really marked her out, it was just complete self-belief.
Absolutely. I love that conversation you had with Paul.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Yeah. Okay, so let's go. Question two. On a scale of 1 to 10, how nervous do you get before a speech or presentation?
How nervous do I get? Mm-hmm. Meaning 10 is very nervous?
10 is very nervous. 0 or 1 is not at all.
3.
Okay. All right. 3.
I care about it. So I'm nervous, but I feel I've had enough experience so that when I'm on stage or when I'm in the room or on the podcast, it's just I go with the thing of let's have some fun, you know?
There you go.
And I don't go by script at all. If I had script, I wouldn't have fun and I'd be nervous.
Yeah, and in fact, the thing I coach my clients most is, if you know you've got value to share, it's far easier than if you don't. So, you know, have that value to share. Yeah. Okay, question three, love, wealth, or happiness? If you could only have one, which one would it be?
I'd say happiness, because if I'm happy with myself, chances are I love myself as well. And I can't love someone else if I don't love myself first. And if I'm happy and I love myself, chances are someone loves me back, then it attracts wealth. That's my answer.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. So you've captured all in one. Excellent. Okay, what about, this is question four, one phrase, epitaph for your gravestone, what people will remember you for or by?
Oh, that's a bit
yeah,
gross.
That's the tough. that's probably the toughest one on here, I think. You know, it's like 7 yeah. words, 10 words, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I have 3. I have 3 words, and that's I was on a podcast and someone asked me about personal branding, and I said those are the things people say about you when you're not in the room, or in this case, when you're dead. I told you I have an acronym fetish, so I would say CAP, K-A-P. She was kind, she was authentic, and she was very practical.
Nice.
Pragmatic. There's a lot of mindfulness stuff out there. Some of it is practical, some of it is over the top for me. I don't get it. But I like a little more like tactical, practical, get in there, something I can relate with. So kind is, you know, Kola, it's not I'm nice with you right now, but I'm gonna kick a dog on the street. Kindness is kind of, and authenticity is what you see, is what you get. So KAP, kindness, authentic.
Okay, got it. Cool. Okay, then question five. If you had to relive one day for the rest of your life, like the movie Groundhog Day, what day would that be?
None. Really none. The old me would have given you a list of 10. I could have done this differently, that differently. I just feel like it was meant to be. Because if it hadn't happened, it wouldn't have led me to today.
And gotcha, be who I like I am. That.
And chances are, if it hadn't led up to today, I wouldn't have met you. And we wouldn't be having this conversation. So it had a role to play. somewhere.
You know, I like that actually. And no one's ever given that. You know, there's been, you know, my wedding, day of my kid's birth. So yeah, I like that. Very original. Okay. Then question six. If you could only listen, speak or see, which would you choose? Listen, speak or see?
Listen. Sad.
Makes sense.
It's sad. Yeah. But I love listening, but I also love my music. So it would be pretty sad without it.
Which is good, because question seven is, if you had to choose one track, one song to walk out on stage to, what would that be?
One track to walk out on stage.
Yeah, it's like your announcement track.
Ah, you mean to say the entrance that you make?
Yeah, yeah. So you come on stage and there's music playing, you know, as you walk on. What's your track?
Oh, wow. Probably something by... either I want to say Snow Patrol or Coldplay. I don't know which track though, but the real me, chances are it'll be something from the 80s, because I love my 80s. Let me think. Oh gosh, I'm taking too long for you, Kola.
No, don't worry. But actually, what's really good is, like, you're leading me into the next question as well. You'll see when I ask it. You'll see when I ask it.
80s, something from the 80s that gets me going. I don't know. It's a silly thing to say. Tarzan Boy. I love Tarzan Boy.
All right.
You know, there's a line in there which says 9 to 5 and give me the order, give me the order. And he's like, I don't belong here. I belong in a jungle.
All right, cool. Because question eight is, if you could bring back one trend, one fashion trend in particular from any era, what would it be?
Yeah, the 60s were too elegant for me. Oh boy, Jackie Kennedy. I would say the crazy 80s, just for fun, the crazy big hair.
Big shoulder pads or something.
Just because I just feel like it would make us laugh more than anything else. And I think if anything else, 2020 has taught us a little bit is just kick back and laugh once in a while.
Yeah, good point. Okay, question nine. What was your favorite period of life? Education, school, university, that kind of time, early work life or now?
I think they all had their share of stress. And when I was younger, I couldn't wait to grow up. And now I'm like, oh gosh, I miss school so much. But school had lots of stress, just like the example you gave with your daughter. I'm loving where I am right now. I'm loving where I am. I'm grateful. I've got the kids. They're still little. The 8-year-old. I'm still the center of his world, let's face it, it's not going to last. And the 12-year-old is already forgotten about me. But the kids are at that age where, you know, they still need their parents. I'm in the early stage of this brand new entrepreneurship journey, which is so scary, Kola. And it's so exciting at the same time. Self-doubt every day, but you get up and you move ahead. It's a very different mindset compared to when I was working for a company. Yeah. So... I'm not saying one is better than the other. I'm just loving where I am right now.
All right. We love that. Good. Okay. And the final question, question 10, is which actor would play you in the movie of your life?
Oh, that's a simple one. I'm going to answer this quickly for a change. This is going to be Sandra Bullock. So Speed came out when I was 15 or 16, I remember. I can't tell you how many people told me I look like her. I don't know if you see that, but...
I do, actually. As soon as you said it, I said, oh, actually, I can see that exactly.
So it's happened like literally hundreds of times, and I'm like, duh. I mean, and also I love her. Like, I love the way she is. I mean, obviously I don't know her. I wish I did. I wish she were a friend, but it feels like she's a friend. She comes across as very genuine. She does what she wants to do. And apparently, I don't see it, but apparently there is a resemblance. So that's a no-brainer.
No, there is. Although, please do not watch Speed 2. I don't know if you have watched it or not. It's
so disappointing.
Oh, my goodness.
If this was question 11, what the biggest letdown? That was my biggest letdown. Like,
how terrible is that movie? But yeah. All right. Hey, listen, Sonal, thank you so much for that. I was really kind of good. We like got a bit different side of you. I'll leave the little delays in there as well. So don't worry about that. Listen, thank you so much for that. When people I know from listening to this will want to either come and work with you or just kind of get into your world, whether it's your podcast, your articles and stuff like that. So where should they go to find you?
So the best place would be my website. So that's my company is called Supercharge, and the website is superchargeyourself.com. Please connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm very, very active there. I'm more active there than I am with my website. And yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear from fellow Kola fans. Because if you like Kola, you're good people. You're my people. So
happy. Yeah, my people are good people. So yeah. Excellent. All right. Excellent. As I said, scroll down, you'll see all the links. But really, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. Especially I want people who will come on and give value, not just be who they are, but actually when you look back, it's like, really, what did they share? So I really appreciate you doing that and taking your time. A final thing is to say goodbye to us in a different language. I know you speak 4 or 5. How many is it now?
Five. Yeah, this is such a fun question. So I'm going to start with Hindi. And that's Pir Milenge, which means see you next time. Okay. English, of course. French, au revoir. Spanish, hasta la vista, adios. And the last one is Dutch, which is my weakest language, tot ziens. There we go.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you very much. Okay, great communicators, you've heard it in 5 different languages. So that's definitely time to say goodbye. Thank you very much to Sonal for sharing great value with us. I don't know what the next episode is going to be, but you know it's going to be good. I will see you on the next time. Bye.
Cool. I forgot to say thank you for having me, but okay.
Oh, no, don't worry. Thank you so much for that. One second, let me stop recording.